not for you. Baby, I couldn't even find the door. Couldn't even see the floor. I'd be sad and blue if not for you. If not for you, then the night would see me wide awake. The day would surely have to break. It would not be new if not for you. If not for you, my sky would fall. Rain would gather too. Without your love, I'd be nowhere at all. I'd be lost if not for you.
Rod Weston, Bill Wyman, Malia McHenry, Leslie Agar, Richard Rodgers, Marianne Faithfull, Mick Jagger, Richard O'Brien, Billy Preston, Yvonne Kelly, Andrew Lloyd Webber, Frank Ormsby Gore, Dr. Med Patterson, Roger Forrester, Ian Dallas, Rob and Miel Fraboni, Leon Russell, Laurie Del Santo, Don Williams, Mick Fleetwood, Sheila Oldham, Mike Rutherford, Gertrude Jekyll, Bob Dylan, Jenny and Susie McLean, David Harlick, Pete Townsend, Sam Clapp, Ronnie Wood, Patty Boyd, Tat Baba, Alice Ormsby Gore, Cream, Terry Doran, Delaney and Bonnie and Friends, My Sister Paula, My Sister Jenny, The Blues Breakers, Robert Stigwood, Terence Conran, Yardbirds, Brian Jones, David Platt, Maureen Starr, Patty Harrison, John Mayle, Brian Epstein, Cynthia, Julian, Yogi, Our Dog, Maharishi, Linda Eastman, Eric Clapton, Mia Farrow and her sister Prudence, Detective Sergeant Pilcher, Semolina Pilchard, Patty Boyd, Donovan, The Who, Ravi Shankar, Jeff Beck, Yoko Ono, The Beach Boys, The Beatles, Elizabeth Arden, Blind Faith, David Bailey, David Crosby, Gene Shrimpton, Eric Swain, Mike Love, Mary Quant, Raj Prem, Celia Hammond, The Faces, Norman Parkinson, Rudolf Nureyev, Ozzie Clark, Joni Mitchell, Salvador Dali, Celia Birtwell, Anthony Norris, The Dominoes, Mary Lees, Cherry Marshall, John Lennon, Ringo Starr, Paul McCartney, George Harrison. This is the author, Patty Boyd.
If not for you, the winter would hold no spring. Couldn't hear a robin sing. I wouldn't have a clue. If not for you.
My mother knew someone at Elizabeth Arden. She pulled a few strings to get me a job. The sense of freedom was intoxicating, exploring the world of boys and bistros. The job at Elizabeth Arden was deadly boring. What I did enjoy in the salon, Vogue, Vanity Fair, Tatler and Queen, were the glossy fashion magazines with photographs of fabulous models. A client came into the salon one day, asked if I'd ever thought of being a model. No, 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 but I certainly could. I certainly could. I didn't need training to walk like a model. I already did. Finding an agency was easy. Come back when you've learnt how to do your hair and makeup properly. I felt so humiliated. Soon my diary was full of jobs. Modelling was fun. I loved trying on clothes, fiddling with my hair and makeup. I moved into a flat in Stanhope Gardens with four other models. London was like that in the 60s. You spoke to strangers and invited them back to your flat without thinking twice. I knew nothing about sex. My mother didn't talk about it. When I had my first period, I thought I was going to die. I was a virgin. Part of me wanted to stay a virgin. Kept asking and I kept refusing. Eventually I felt pressured and I agreed. It wasn't the big deal I had imagined. In fact, it was pretty painful and I regretted it.
Believe it when he's dead. Oh, girl.
London belonged to the young. All the old class structures were breaking down. All that mattered was what you could do, what you could create. It was a golden age, an exciting time to be alive. Working for the most successful photographers in London, I was in the thick of it. Soon I had an agent in Paris too. Busts and waists, narrow hips and long legs. I had all of those.
She's the kind of a girl that makes the news of the world. You could say she was attractively built.
And then I discovered these diet biscuits. I hardly had to eat anything else. In November 1963, charming television commercial. The director was a young, soft-spoken American called Dick Lester. I had to pick crisps out of a packet and put them into my mouth, lisping about how much I loved Smith's crisps. In March 1964, I was surprised to see Dick Lester. I automatically assumed it was another commercial. They wanted me. Top secret, I had been offered a part in a Beatles film. No, no, no. I don't want to do it. No, no, no. I can't do it. No, no, no. I wasn't an actress. I had to play a schoolgirl dressed in uniform. There were no lines.
Prisoners?
And it was only 2 days' work. Britain was in the early stages of Beatlemania. I didn't have any of the Beatles' records and hadn't paid much attention to them or their music.
Beatles take us into the last section of the show with Roll Over Beethoven.
We're gonna write a little letter, gonna mail it to my local DJ. It's a rocking new record for my jockey to play. Roll over Beethoven, gotta hit it again today. Now my temperature's rising, jukebox blows the fuse. A heartbeat rhythm, my soul gets to singing the blues. Roll over Beethoven, tell Tchaikovsky the news. Well, if you feel it, pack it, get your lover and feel and walk it. Roll it over and move on up, just pop a feather and a reel and mark it. Roll it over, roll over Beethoven, dig these rhythm and blues.
Beatle singing Roll Over Beethoven. He's my favourite. I'm also informed that it's his birthday on the 25th, but I'm sure you all knew that anyway.
The film crew had taken over the train and most of the action happened on the move.
Let's do something then.
Like what?
Okay. God, it's the girls.
I'll deal them.
Aye, aye, the Liverpool shuffle.
Oh, 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 I should have realized what a kiss could be.
John Lennon seemed more cynical and brash than the others, Ringo Starr the most endearing, Paul McCartney was cute, and George Harrison, velvet brown eyes, dark chestnut hair, best-looking man I'd ever seen. At the break for lunch, I found myself sitting next to him. Being close to him was electrifying. The train neared London. George said, "Will you marry me?" I laughed. I was thrown. Was he serious? I said I couldn't. I had a boyfriend. There was a press photo call at Twickenham Studios. I had to stand behind a beetle and pretend to do their hair. I made a beeline for George, asked how my boyfriend was. I told him I'd dumped him. He grinned and asked me to have dinner with him. We went to the Garrick Club in Covent Garden with the charismatic Brian Epstein. We had a lovely evening. I saw George again on the 12th of March, a few days before my 20th birthday. He had turned 21 a month before, and that was it. My mother adored him, and so did my brothers and sisters. In May, Brian arranged a holiday for us all. John and his wife Cynthia, George and I went to Tahiti, where we spent 4 weeks island hopping in an elderly wooden fishing boat. Tahiti was paradise. The water was aquamarine and crystal clear. We swam and snorkeled, sailed from island to island and sunbathed. We read books and the boys played their guitars.
George, did you get any benefit from your trip overseas?
Did I or do I?
Do you, from your trips overseas?
Yeah.
What do you get?
Well, you see a different place that you wouldn't see if you didn't go on a trip overseas.
Correct. Do you enjoy traveling?
No, I don't like travelling, even if it's on a holiday, you know, or anything.
But you don't travelling bits of to get is out, terrible.
But all of us like seeing places to get there, but not the travelling.
We're hanging on to the time machine. Yeah.
Did you enjoy your holidays to Tahiti and the Caribbean, wasn't it?
We met one of your
fella came swimming behind me saying, "You're having a good time."
Sydney,
yeah.
Saying I've come all the way from Sydney.
Yeah, as if it was my fault.
Why did you split up and take your holidays?
I don't like them.
It makes it harder for people to cross to catch us up. If we all go together, it's a cinch, you know, going to an airport.
And anyway, besides all that, Paul and Ringo fancied going to wherever they went, and I don't know what happened to us. Somebody else gave us the tickets.
George and I spent as much time as we could together. I loved being with him. He was so beautiful and so funny. I had never met anyone like him before or experienced anything like the glamorous world he inhabited. The Beatles were away on tour for much of 1964, and in August they set off again for 2 months in America, the longest, most ambitious and most exhausting tour they ever did. Screaming fans were everywhere, invading the stage, invading their hotels, invading their lives. I think the Beatles were quite frightened of their fans. I was frightened of them too. I used to get hateful letters, particularly from American girls. The fans might not have liked my relationship with George, but the media were delighted with it, and I was more in demand than ever. I made TV commercials for Dop Shampoo, in which I drove through a car wash in an open-topped car.
Meet Dop, the fabulous Pearl Eye Shampoo from Paris. Dop, in four unique formulas with special beneficial action for greasy, dry, dandruff, or normal hair. Dop, the right shampoo for every kind of hair. Pearl Eye Shampoo by L'Oreal.
The fans were making life intolerable for us, and not only when the Beatles were performing. None of them could go into or out of their flats without being grabbed, mauled, and begged for autographs at any time of day or night. John and Ringo bought grand houses in St George's Hill. George didn't like that idea and chose instead a modern four-bedroom bungalow in Esher called Kinfauns, about 20 minutes' drive from the others. With the addition of a 14-foot high gate, it was very private, and the house was surrounded by 3/4 acre of garden. He was still doing a lot of touring. During the first 3 years that I knew him, the Beatles averaged 3 long tours in each, and when they weren't touring, they were recording. Eventually, I moved in with George. London was only 45 minutes away, easy to get to for work or play. One evening, we were invited to dinner by a Mr. Angadi. He wanted George to meet a sitar player called Ravi Shankar. They talked music all evening, and George was awestruck. Soon afterwards, Ravi came to Kinfauns to give George a sitar lesson. He and Ravi became friends, and a couple of months later, Ravi invited us to India, where where he would be our guide for spiritual, musical and cultural lessons. One December evening, when we were back in London, George stopped the car and said, "Will you marry me? Brian says it's okay." I said, "Oh yes, that would be fabulous." But George had had to ask Brian's permission. We were married on the 21st of January, 1966. It was not the wedding I had dreamt of. Brian didn't want a big fuss, but I was so happy and so much in love, I didn't care. Mary Quant pinky red shot silk dress, just above the knee, with creamy stockings and pointy red shoes, red fox fur coat. Brian Epstein was there and Paul McCartney, who was George's best man.
This one's called the Honey Boot Sog.
The Honey Boot Sog? You were?
Well, you see, I've got a terrible nose.
All right, Paul, the honeymoon song.
I never knew that a day like today lay before us. I've got the sun in my heart, and my heart's in the sun. Skies are as bright as your eyes, the horizon is open. Love is the ceiling, feelings are reeling, free as the air. Forever on and forever, forever on, side by side. Whoever knew that we two could be free as we'd fancy. Fancy is free, but are we who are bound to each other by love? To each other by love. But are we who are bound to each other by love? To each other by love. To each other by love. To each other by love.
We spent our honeymoon in Barbados in a fabulous rented villa. I was so happy, I thought I might burst. It was bliss to have George to myself. No work pulling either of us and no fans making life a misery. George was away on tour again. I had a yearning to take up chanting, meditation or something spiritual. Something was missing from our lives. We came upon an advert for transcendental meditation classes in London. Perfect. Off we went to enroll in the spiritual regeneration movement. I discovered that Maharishi was coming to London in August to give a lecture at the Hilton Hotel. I was desperate to go, and George said he would come too. In the end, we all went, George, John, Paul, Jane, Ringo and I. We were travelling to Bangor in the same train as Maharishi. For the first time, Brian Epstein was not in charge. He'd said he would join us later. At the seminar in Bangor, the telephone rang, and the world as we knew it came to an end. Brian Epstein was dead.
There's no real such thing as death anyway. I mean, it's death on a physical level, but life goes on everywhere and you just keep going, really. But so the thing is, it's not as disappointing as it is and it isn't, you know. And the thing about the comfort is to know that he's okay.
He was 32 years old. He was irreplaceable. I cannot believe he committed suicide. We knew that life would never be the same again.
Thank you. Show me that I'm everywhere. Get me home for tea. It's all too much for me to take. There's plenty there for everybody. The more you give, the more you get, the more it is a bit too much. I still have the time to take this opportunity.
to run.